You found the Love Fly podcast. I'm Paul Tizard, Fear of Flying Coach, and I've been helping nervous flyers since 1997. So in this podcast, you are going to find aviation experts, psychologists, coaches, enthusiasts, and people normal, just like you, who have overcome their fears. Welcome. So welcome, Christine, to the Love Fly podcast. Nice to have you on.
Thank you very much for having me.
Now, I'm really looking forward to your story. There's a couple of bits that caught my attention when you were posting about this, and it sounds like it's been an amazing journey, which is going to be massively helpful for people. So very grateful for you giving your time up today. So tell us a little bit about yourself. Where are you in the world? And yeah, just fill us in some details.
Sure. So I'm in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, in the Rocky Mountains, out west. That also means that to get just about anywhere, we have to fly. So this has been a journey, I think, is a really good word for it for me.
Yeah.
But I hope it even helps one person out there to be able to get on that plane and go, then it's absolutely worth it.
Oh, well, I'll definitely do that based on what you've told me already. So tell us about the fear of flying, how it started, what it was like for you, and don't spare any details because we love the details.
For sure. So I actually started flying in the mid-80s, was fortunate to spend part of the year in Bermuda growing up, and we lived in Eastern Canada at the time. So flew for decades and really loved it. 2005, I was involved in an aviation incident that was pretty significant in international lines. And you would think that would have been where my fear of flying started. I think it was maybe the first crack in the foundation. Yes. But I did continue to travel after that because, you know, I was very young. And in my mind, I'd had 2 decades of safe, enjoyable travels. It was a one-off incident. And for me, traveling and flying was still very safe.
Yeah.
And I did a couple of fairly long-haul trips, actually, almost immediately after that, and did really well. But a few years later, was traveling from Toronto to the Dominican Republic with boyfriend at the time. And he was a very level-headed, put-together guy. He raced motorbikes, so wasn't a risk-averse person. But as we were getting ready to board this plane, he just crumbled and he was petrified. The pilot had to come out and try to coax him onto the plane, and he wanted to take our luggage off and go home. And it almost activated a part of my brain that went, wait a second, maybe I should be a little bit scared. And that was the first flight I can really think of that I didn't enjoy. I was very much on edge, feeling all the bumps, watching what everybody else was doing. And on our return flight home, flying through the Caribbean in August is often quite bumpy and it's totally fine. But if you hit that first kind of drop, that was really the moment that a switch went off in my mind. And for the next almost 20 years, it's been one of the most terrifying things that I could possibly bring myself to do.
So 20 years, crikey. So were you still flying or did you avoid it?
I had never not gone on a trip. It's really just in recent years that I found myself starting to avoid going to things, but I had never actually booked something enough. And my love for travel still superseded my fear. I had tried different things over the years, like hypnotherapy, cognitive behavioral therapy, and it just didn't work for me. So I was trying to find my own ways to cope. And definitely got worse over the years. It was usually involved drinking a little bit too much or, you know, getting tablets ahead of time and taking way too many because I just really wanted to knock myself out. And I think for me, the real cherry on the sundae was during the pandemic when we didn't travel at all. For a few years, I got a bit of a break from it. My mindset really switched to, I can survive without traveling. So why put myself through the stress and the fear of flying? Because at that point, not only was it consuming my thoughts for days before I left and totally killing any excitement about vacationing that I had, but the entire time I was away, I was just obsessing over the fact that I had to fly and checking the weather and checking turbulence forecasts and watching the FlightAware app. So I wasn't even enjoying the destination once I got there. And that was kind of a game changer for me.
Okay, I think so just pause for a second because that's really interesting stuff. So what would happen to you in terms of anticipatory anxiety or, you know, Did you have any sort of rituals or anything like that that you were doing?
Yeah, absolutely. Constantly checking weather forecasts, constantly checking the free turbulence apps, which I can say to everyone out there is probably the worst thing you can do. In my mind, I was preparing myself and thought it won't be as bad if I'm prepared. But if those apps were reliable, pilots wouldn't go to the airport hours before their flights. You know, it may have an algorithm that picks up on weather, but it totally eliminates the human factor where they can fly around it and they make other plans. So I was just fueling my anxiety before I even got to the airport.
Yeah, that sounds pretty grim.
Yeah.
So what was your belief system about flying?
I thought for me that it was the lack of control. And some of that may go back to the incident that I was part of because it was a pilot error in that case. I used to joke that, you know, if I was flying the plane, we would get there safely. And so once those doors close, really, you've surrendered yourself to the pilot and the cabin crew to take care of you safely. And thankfully, through the work that I've done, a lot, and thanks to your podcast, and I have to say, there's something about Captain Steve. His voice is just so calming. And also for my flights the last few weeks, I was just picturing him flying that plane and getting us there safely. But it was really coming to the realization that you don't need to be in control of the plane. There are people who are very qualified to do that and to get you there safely. What we're really needing to be in control of is our thoughts and how those thoughts make us feel, and building up a toolbox before you get on that plane so that when those thoughts creep up, you can calm yourself down.
Yeah. So we'll get into that, because you've obviously done some proper work. This has all happened since the pandemic, so we need to sort of find out a little bit more what you've done, so we can get some of the magic. I know you were in an incident back in 2005, was it? Did you say?
Yeah, one time ago.
and you don't want to talk about it, and that's fine. That didn't trigger you. It was the partner at the time that then sort of created this idea that it wasn't safe, and then something would happen to you. So when you were on board, you wanted to be flying it, of course, but was it the turbulence? Was it movement, noises? What would you put it down to? Or is it just everything?
I think everything. And it was the anticipation of any of those things happening that would start, days and sometimes weeks, even before travel. That's when the upset tummies would start, and not sleeping and cold sweats and shaky knees. And I think one of my biggest pet peeves was people around me that would say, "You'll be fine. It's fine." But on the inside, screaming. You're absolutely petrified, and they can't understand how afraid you are and how hard this is for you.
No. So when you were on board then, did you get up and move around? What was your process?
Yeah, I did have some rituals, and I've realized that some of those rituals were very much contributing to how fearful the experience was for me. I had it in my mind that I needed to sit as close to the front as possible. There was just something in my head that if I could see the cabin crew, like there was something magical that they could say to you when I was feeling fearful. If I was close to them, that was going to make me feel better. I almost didn't get on a flight when I wasn't able to pre-select a seat and had to sit a bit further back. But that was a really big one for me. There were certain aircraft that I didn't want to fly because they had maybe different safety records or different reputations. I would avoid booking flights that had those planes when that's totally out of your control and they can change it on you at the last minute. But when I was planning vacations, I would research these kinds of things, where I used to research, resorts and beaches. I was now just hyper-focused on what are my best odds of getting there without something bad happening, because I think my rational mind knew flying is very safe, but it was without me panicking and without me having a complete meltdown while I'm on the plane because I can't get off.
Yeah. Okay. So talk us through, what was the turning point? Now, I get the sense that during the pandemic, it gave you permission to sort of like, well, I can't fly, so I haven't got to think about it anyway. So, but what happened then that made you think, oh, do you know what? I can do something about this.
Yeah. So this past summer, I had an aunt who lives in Ottawa, Ontario. It's about a 4.5-hour flight for me, and I hadn't seen her since before the pandemic. And she really, really wanted me to come visit. And I also had some friends discussing booking a group trip to celebrate a huge milestone for a friend in the Dominican Republic this fall. So I thought, let me go to Ottawa, and it's going to be a really good test to see how I do. It's the longest flight I've been on in years. I went through all my rituals when I was booking. Thankfully, my flight there was excellent. But on the way back, we were having some pretty serious weather across Canada, extreme heat alerts, thunderstorms, tornado warnings. And it started days before I was even to return home, checking the weather, checking the turbulence forecasts, looking to see if there were other ways I could get home without flying. And that flight, granted, was a little bit bumpy, but I had worked myself up to a point before I even got to the airport that I was at like a 400 out of 10 panic before I even got on the plane. And that entire flight, I was just taking anything I could get my hands on, whether it was the glass of wine or an antihistamine or an anti-nausea tablet. I just wanted something to know. And unfortunately, by the time we got to Edmonton, I was so out of it that I actually didn't know where we were. I wasn't sure which airport I was at. And I realized at that point that that was a rock bottom for me. And really, the biggest danger for me with traveling at that point was me and how I was reacting to it. So at that point, it was either put your passport away and you're done, where you need to really buckle down and do some serious work to fix this. And that was the turning point for me.
Okay, that's great. Okay, so talk us through the serious work then, because this sounds interesting, because you, to my mind, that feels like quite a big turnaround, bearing in mind where you've come from, 20 years of all that stuff. And then, I mean, the pandemic wasn't that long ago, was it? You know, although it seems like a distant memory now, but it wasn't really that long ago. So you must have done quite a lot in fairly short order. So talk us through how you started, what you did, what was most helpful, least helpful.
For sure. The first thing I did was I booked the trip to the Dominican Republic with my friends for the end of November. And at that point, I had about 5.5 months. But for me, it was the goal. It was kind of the prize at the end. I really buckled down. And
so that's a great one there, Christine. So that's really brave, isn't it? So 5.5 months out, you've booked it. And did you have a sort of a mindset or an image in your head of how you might like to be on that flight?
I knew I really wanted to be on that trip. We were celebrating a milestone for someone who's very close to me. It was a really good group of friends. It was a destination that I loved and hadn't been back to in a really long time. And so I was really determined to go. And I actually booked it, and I refused to take cancellation insurance because I thought, I know myself.
I love it.
The sphere is gonna
love that, you know, just falls on that. Refused to take cancellation. Brilliant.
I really committed. And then I knew that I was responsible to do the work until then. And I always felt very alone in my fear, because you're at the airport and you're looking around and everybody's so happy and people are getting off the planes and they're so relaxed. We've been sleeping. That too. And I'm sitting here just petrified. And I had always been very envious of that. So I really needed to have a firm goal so that I buckled down and I was going to make this better. And I didn't need to be 100%, but I just needed to be able to go. And I thought, there's got to be somebody else out there like me. And my first thought was, there's a Facebook group for everything these days. So let me check Facebook. And sure enough, this fear of flying group popped up, and it had, you know, quite a lot of members from all over the world. And I joined, and almost every other post said, love fly podcasts, the love fly podcasts. And I wasn't really a podcast girl. I had tried therapies. I thought, like, what's a podcast going to do for me? But even just in the first few episodes, it really felt like you genuinely understood how this feels. It's like you were in my head and sharing the thoughts that I had been having and thought I was alone with for a lot of years.
Oh, wow. It's lovely. So the fear of flying group, what wasn't the love fly one? It was a different one, was it?
Yeah, it was just a general fear of flying group.
Wow. Like Reddit or something. I know, so it was on Facebook.
Yeah, you're highly recommended on there. And I just started listening to podcasts every day when I was driving to and from work. And there were some that really resonated with me. And there were some that, you know, would just send chills down my spine. Like when you'd play the sounds that you hear when a plane's taking off, just you instantly would feel, you know, kind of cold chills. But I really committed to listening and engaging with those. And there's some wonderful resources on YouTube as well. There's some really good books out there. But I found a lot of the guests that you had as well, just the not feeling alone and knowing that somebody else had gone through it, just opened my mind in a different way to learning and absorbing everything that you were sharing with us.
Yeah. Oh, that's very kind. Well, I'm glad it's helping. So or helped. So because some people literally go through them in order, starting with one and work their way and smash through them. What did you do?
That's what I did as well. I'm not sure exactly how far I got. I think at some point it just kind of started mixing them up. But
you'll get into the world to live after a while. I was like, oh my God, because there's about 150 odd now of amazing guests. Yeah.
Yeah, I really feel on the experts that you had on. I mean, it's one thing when you read something on Google in terms of aircraft safety and the training that they have, but actually hearing it firsthand was just very reassuring. And I learned a lot that I didn't know. I can hear Captain Steve talk about how the plane porpoises through the air. And that image was really critical for me.
Well, was that helpful though? Because whenever he says that, I have a linear moment, I think, oh, because I visualize like, you know, like I see this sort of motion thing, this, but he's not talking about that because it's more gentle. But
yeah,
so I always shudder when he says that word, but I'm really interested. That's good that it helps. I should tell him.
Yeah, and I did a little experiment before I left. I don't recommend doing this if you're the one driving, and only try it if it's safe to do so. But just roll down the window when you're driving and put your hand out and just watch what it does against most gentle wind resistance, and the speed of your vehicle compared to the speed of the plane is really insignificant. But just having that visual in my mind when the plane did start to porpoise a few times was really calming. It didn't feel any more like it was dropping. Just knowing that it's not dropping was tremendously reassuring.
Yeah. So what would you put the success you've had down to then? Because you've always done loads of work over the years, but was there a sort of a particular thing that you just knew, or was it more gradual? What was it like for you? That would have been a better question. What was it like for you? All that waffle before it, sorry.
I think how difficult my flight in August was, and really desperately wanting to go on this holiday were a really big part of it. Yeah. I think I also knew that if I canceled this holiday and didn't go, that was going to be a very slippery slope for me, because I had never canceled. I had always forced myself to go, and I couldn't go in the state that I had been in on my last flight. Something had to change, or I wasn't going to get there safely, especially because I was flying down on my own. It was 2 5-hour flights with a long connection, and I was by myself, including a red-eye flight. So it was like all of the things that generally trigger me at once. I really ripped off the band-aid, but it was really that determination to be there, not to let my friends down, not to miss this event. You know, however long I'm uncomfortable on the plane, to miss something that I can never be part of again because I wasn't there, we never get that back. So I had a lot of motivating factors that really pushed me to buckle down. I see people posting on some of those groups, I'm taking off in 2 hours and I'm freaking out. And I really do feel for them because I've been there so many times. But unfortunately, there's not anything that anybody can say to you, especially in a comment on a social media platform, that's going to fix that. This is a wound. The fear of flying really is a wound. And it takes time to heal, and you have to do it properly. It's not something that you can rush. Although listening to these podcasts, you know, even the day of certainly might help. It's not going to fix it. This is something that requires some effort and commitment and time, but it's so worth it.
So you were doing, so what was your, so clearly you were very, very motivated, you had a really clear goal, you had a strong, compelling reason to go, and you'd also done, you know, the phrase burned your bridges, you just saw it, right, no cancellation shorts, I'm going, don't care what. So these are all really good factors, you know, like there's a good combination of going towards and also some consequences if you didn't do it. And so I think that's so you sort of primed yourself the best possible way. And then you had 5 months between August, November. That's right, isn't it? So
yeah.
What did you do? You know, so I know you did the podcast, but how much, how often, you know?
Yeah, at least once or twice a day. If I found myself having kind of, I buckled down, any kind of thoughts that I having, or if I found myself creeping back in, I wonder if the flight that went today had any turbulence, I would stop that and replace it with something more helpful, like watching a YouTube video of takeoff and landing. I had certain podcasts that I flagged that just were very comforting for me, or some that were actually more triggering for me that I would listen to more often than I actually found the Flight Aware app, where it used to scare me. Taking a peek at just how many planes are up there and everybody's okay was reassuring to me as well. You know, going into the trip, I was probably about a week and a half out, and I was feeling so good, and I was excited, and I was packing early and making reservations for dinner down there already, and I was ready to go. And the rest of the group went ahead of me. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to join them for the whole trip. But I got a very innocent text message from a friend who said, the flight was really smooth, just a few bumps over the ocean. And I completely shut down. It was like all the work I had done all those months had gone completely out the window. All the feelings I had of courage and motivation to go were gone. I was not going. There was no way I could go. I was canceling. I didn't care about the money. I was done.
Well, that's quite dramatic, isn't it? So yeah. What was it about the text that triggered that? Was it the ocean, the bumps, or just the fact that there's that to your flight?
Just thinking about the bumps, I thought, I can't do it. I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm going to totally freak out. I can't go. And I felt like a failure because I had put in so much time and there were so many people counting on me. And at that point, I physically couldn't go. I was physically ill. I think I lost about 14 pounds over the course of a week. I was so sick just thinking about having to fly. And it was departure day. And at that point, I still didn't think I was going, but I was going through the motions and running my errands. And that was really when I had that sort of eureka moment where I thought, I can't not go. I've never not gone. I've never let my fear actually stop me. That's the one place where I've always won, is I would go. So I have to go. And it was very difficult. My hands were shaking. I remember my knees were buckling so bad. I had to go down the stairs in my house on my bum, leaving for the airport. But I was determined to go. And that was sort of when I had the realization that not only is this a wound, but it's a wound that needs a very uncomfortable cleaning if it's going to heal properly, because you can have all those tools, but until you actually know that you can use them, they're really not worth a whole lot. You need to push through it. You need to put that foot on the plane and go. And really the only failure is if you stop yourself from experiencing that. It's not the fear, because I felt it. It's like, it was gone. I was back to square one in that moment. And it was like, I hadn't done any work, but I knew I had to go.
That's amazing. Where do you think that inner kind of sudden strength or message came from? You know, like, because that's just quite remarkable, isn't that? When you literally almost feel like you've done a complete 360, you know, 180, which is it? 180, not 360.
Yeah.
The 360, you carried on, aren't you? You just have gone around the roundabout. The 180, you've gone back on yourself. That's just phenomenal. Where do you think that inner strength came from then?
You actually had an episode that talked about pushing through the fear, and I listened to it that day and it really resonated with me. And then I started thinking about, this isn't just about me. There's people waiting for me to get there who were really important for me to be there. I have an aunt who's getting a bit older and starting to have mobility issues, but she loves to travel with me and she's got a little bit of a bucket list. And so it wasn't just about me and my feelings. It was about how my decision was going to impact everybody else around me. And I think that was kind of the breaking point where I said, I have to push through this and I have to at least try.
That's good. Yeah. So and sometimes we do find the strength in others, don't we? So that's the thing, that it's the what if letting other people down can also add to that strength or resolve that we got. That's really good. Okay. So tell us then, what were you like on the flight? What did you do to help yourself?
I don't want to oversell it. I'm not going to be rushing out and, you know, applying for jobs where you get to fly every day tomorrow. But I did okay. And they weren't the smoothest flights. Anyone who's ever flown across Canada knows through Manitoba and Ontario, there's just weird air pressure systems. 365 days a year, 24 hours a day, doesn't matter what you do, it can be quite rough. And then, of course, going from Canadian winter to the Dominican Republic heat, you know, there was some air moving around there that wasn't very comfortable. But one thing that I tried on these flights I had never done before was noise-canceling headphones.
Okay.
I didn't think the sound bothered me until it was gone. And the closest thing I can equate it to is if you're watching a really scary movie and then you put it on mute and the sound effects and the music are gone, it's not so scary anymore. Mm. And I put these headphones on and it totally drowned out that noise. And I think it allowed me to really focus on my breathing and the movie I was watching. And not the sounds, and not being worried about, did you hear that? And why did that get quiet? And why is that getting louder? It took one huge layer of fear off, and it allowed me to focus on using more of my tools to calm down. I had always sat at the front, and I remember you saying, do the opposite. Just do something different. Don't follow your rituals. So I booked myself on a window seat, quite a bit further back over the wing for the second part of my flight. And when we did hit the bumps, I was sure that we were dropping hundreds of feet. And I'm looking around thinking, like, why is nobody else panicking? I was fully expecting the cabin crew to be crawling back to their seats and everyone's going about their business as usual. And I had usually avoided any kind of visuals outside the plane. I would just kind of turtle and cover my eyes. But I forced myself to look out and the wing was not really moving. I mean, it was I wouldn't even say it was shaking. It was actually moving quite smoothly along in comparison to the clouds. We weren't dropping at all. And it just immediately grounded me. I guess it gave me a visual perspective or some kind of visual cue that we're not dropping. And on the flight home, we were flying in the dark. And one thing that I found hugely helpful was if your flight has Wi-Fi, I think it's a good investment. For one, being in touch with people back home, you don't feel like you're quite so far away. Just being part of that, you know, daily group chat and sharing conversations with people at home, I felt much more connected, and not that I was up in the sky and totally helpless and hopeless. But the airline I was flying with actually had an in-flight app that showed the altitude of the plane. And I just found it fascinating that at times that felt very bumpy to me, we were actually only moving by like 1 to 2 feet. We have potholes deeper than that here in Edmonton. So when you think about the size of a sky, that's nothing. Times that it did feel like more of a drop, and it's like, okay, well, that one was 5 feet, so I'm not crazy. What I'm feeling is valid, but it was only 5 feet. And I ended up staring at that app for probably half of the flight home, but it kept me calm.
I'm rocking.
Yeah. Not what the person next to me was thinking, but yeah, that really did.
Well, that's quite logical. There's some really good logic there as well, isn't there? You know, despite what you're feeling, so you kind of validate it. So there is a slight drop. Obviously, it doesn't take any account of the fact you're still rocketing along at speed.
Yeah.
But you can kind of go, oh yeah, we did change altitude there. Yeah. But like you say, 5 feet out of 35,000, whatever, is not
exactly
that much, is it? Yeah. No, that's a really good one.
And definitely to engage with the cabin crew, I boarded and I just told the flight attendant, I'm a very fearful flyer. I'm doing some fear of flying courses, but this is my first really long flight, and I am anxious. I asked them if there was anything in their pre-flight briefing that they could share with me. And on all four flights, they were lovely. On three of the occasions, the pilot actually came out to chat with me as well. And one pilot, ironically, he's been a pilot for 17 years, and his wife is a trauma nurse in an ER, and she's a petrified flyer. He told me she hates flying. So we're certainly not alone in this fear, but
no.
Experience the cabin crew, they want to know and they want to help you, and if there's something they can tell you ahead of time that'll make you feel reassured, they will. And there was one patch that we were expecting about 45 minutes of rough air on the way home, which I wasn't thrilled to hear, but I knew it was coming, and I felt very comfortable that they were aware, and all the planes before them and around them were aware and had got through it safely. And when we were done, the cabin crew actually came through and high-fived me, so it was a really good feeling.
Let me ask you a question, which I sometimes ask nervous flyers or previously nervous flyers. There's turbulence on the fly, right? Do you want to know at the beginning of the flight, or would you rather just find out as it happens?
For me, I prefer to know, just because it gives me a sense that everybody else is prepared.
Right.
That being said, I know that sometimes you can't always predict it. So I've really been trying to shift my focus from needing to know about it to it's okay and turbulence is safe. And how do I get myself through that without having a complete meltdown? A really big thing for me, something that I've learned, and it's a lesson that I've learned over the last 2 decades, is, you know, having a drink is fine, taking a tablet is fine, but don't inebriate yourself to the point where you can no longer use those tools in your toolbox to make yourself feel better. If you're not aware of what's going on around you and what's happening, it's impossible to dig deep and do those breathing exercises or think about things like look at the wing and see if it's moving. And I think it actually makes you feel like you're moving more. So that was a big lesson for me, was just to really take it easy, anything that's kind of mood altering, because you're just going to make it worse for yourself. You think you're going to knock yourself out, but when your adrenaline is here, it doesn't matter how much you drink or how many tablets you take, it just makes you totally off. And that was a really difficult lesson that I learned on my flight in August. And I was really happy this flight that I was able to focus, do the breathing, think about the tools that I had to get through it. And I just felt so much better. And I will never forget the descent into Punta Cana thinking, I got here. I actually fell asleep. I fell asleep for part of the flight. I haven't slept on a plane in almost 2 days. I'm shocked that I was actually.
So how long? When was the last you slept on a plane?
Probably pre-2007.
Wow.
Because I'm usually just so hysterical thinking I need to see, hear, smell everything. As you know, me in row 5D is going to be able to do anything about it anyway. Well, but it's
you just don't know that, do you? I mean, either they might pop back and say, this tricky bit of the flight coming up, what do you think? Yeah. So you've stood down as standby pilot then. That's that you've let go of that responsibility. Well, that's good, you know. They let you go. I think it's amazing. So you keep talking about tools that you used. Obviously, you mentioned the breathing. I don't know if you're talking about the breathing that we suggest. Yes. Or, so the paced breathing thing. Yeah.
That was a huge help for me. You're having a distraction. And if that distraction, maybe it's not watching a movie. Maybe it is staring at the wing for an hour just to see that it's not moving. But if that's what makes you feel calm and gives you a perspective of what's actually not happening around you, you know, whatever works, just give yourself the chance to be able to use it and not be just totally out there and feeling like the plane is shaking and you're spiraling out of control.
Yeah. So tell us, are there any other tools? So I've picked up the noise cancelling headphones, the breathing, the listen to the podcasts, then focusing on something. Was there anything else that you did? Because what I'm trying to mine for is like the techniques.
Yeah, engaging with the cabin crew for sure was a really big one for me. And just knowing that they knew how I was feeling and that they were there for me. If you need to get up and walk around, that was another one for me. If I was starting to feel like maybe I was getting a bit anxious and I wasn't doing well, it's amazing what a distraction it is just walking through the aisles and people watching for those 30 seconds from the front to the back of the plane.
It's a little bit weird, as well, if you don't mind me saying, Christy. I mean, with respect.
Anything that shifts your mind away, because this is such an obsessive thought when you're afraid of flying, especially when you're afraid of turbulence, it's all you can think about. So anything that distracts you even for a moment kind of resets your anxiety back to zero, I found has been really helpful for me.
Yeah. So how do you describe yourself now in relation to flying?
This was the first holiday I've been on in a long time that once I got off that plane, I actually enjoyed my trip and I didn't think about flying again until it was time to go home. So that was a huge thing for me. I was able to be present and enjoy what was happening.
How did you do that then? So what's the secret sauce?
I got there. You know, I got there. I flew over the ocean. I had previously put myself on a very hard limit of 4-hour flights. And the flight from Toronto to Punta Cana is about 5 hours and change. So I made it and I was okay. And I realized that I now have some resources that I can use in future travel so that I can be okay to keep traveling. Yeah. And then it just kind of left my mind. Still a little unsure about doing a transatlantic flight. That's my next goal. So I know I have more work to do with that. Previous cap on flying was 4 hours. Now I can say comfortably I can do about 6. And the next goal is like maybe 8, because I'd love to get back to Europe again. That's kind of the minimum for us to make it there. So I'm not 100%. It's not that I love to fly. It's just, you know, I felt like I absolutely couldn't go. I absolutely couldn't do it. I physically and mentally could not go on this trip. And I did. And I had fun. And it was so beautiful. And I was able to be part of such special memories. And then I also made it home. And I was okay.
Yeah. Well, you put a phrase in your text about being at your own personal Everest. And I thought that was a thing that really caught my eye, you know. And in what way would you say that was for you?
I had a lot of friends before departure saying, maybe this is too much. Maybe you shouldn't go. Maybe you should give it more time. Maybe you should try a shorter regional flight first and see how you do. And I thought, no, I'm doing all the things. I'm going back to Punta Cana, which is where I had that uncomfortable flight with my ex-partner in 2007. It's the same route. I'm reliving that. We're flying over the ocean, flying at night. I'm flying by myself. It's more than 4 hours. I'm really going to push myself and challenge myself, because if I can do this, then I can keep going. I can keep traveling. And those shorter flights are going to be a breeze for me.
That's great. Honestly, really great. And I mean, it sounds to me like it's the mindset is not just about flying. It's much bigger than that, isn't it, for you? In terms of that determination, and regardless of what others are saying to you, is it? Yeah, I just get this sense of it. Yeah, it's just bigger, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm probably one of the most stubborn people you'll ever meet. I run an animal rescue.
It's a competition, you know.
I run an animal rescue. I specialize in neonatal orphan kittens that have like a 5% chance of survival, and I take every single one. I am determined to try. I will always try and give 200%, and I'm not ready to give up traveling. I have such wonderful memories growing up in Bermuda. I really want to get back there. I want to spend more time with family out east. I'm also of Ukrainian heritage and would love to go see Ukraine someday when it's safe to do so. So I have plans, and unfortunately, maybe not unfortunately, but requires flying to get there. And that means that I need to do.
I love that. You caught yourself as you hit. Yeah. Unfortunately, I've got to fly.
You know, a 2-decade-old habit of, oh my God, I have to fly. Like, oh, there's nothing worse than having to fly. But planning a trip for July to Bermuda, I'm going to take my best girlfriends who've never been there and show them where I grew up. And I can say for the first time in a very long time, the fear of getting on those planes and if there's going to be turbulence is not something that's part of my planning process. And I know I need to keep it up and I need to keep doing the work, especially because I'm not flying very frequently. And, you know, I don't want to lose that confidence and lose those tools, but it just feels really good to be focusing on the memories that will be made and not the fear of getting there.
Mic drop moments there. So, you know how it finishes these podcasts. There's some lovely stuff already in there, but if you had to kind of sum up with a couple of messages of hope for people who are listening going, yeah, it's all right for you. How would you say it? What would you sum up?
I do understand how they're feeling. It's completely paralyzing physically and mentally when you're so afraid to fly, but it's worth it. It's worth doing the work. It's worth the uncomfort. It's worth pushing through the fear because there is a light at the end of the tunnel and you're not alone. There's a lot of amazing resources out there. You just have to put in the work. And, you know, I know I use this term a lot, but it's true. I really feel like I built a toolbox. And when you're on that plane and you're having those feelings, you'll have tools that you can use that will help you. And you'll just be so grateful that you did when you get there.
Yeah. And what would you say would be for somebody who's literally, we'd say, cacking it, what's the simplest, easiest way that they could start that would be, you know, the lowest, perhaps, anxiety-provoking, whatever? What would you say?
Definitely avoid things that make your anxiety worse. Watching shows about crashes and watching turbulence forecasts, they're not going to help because there are so many more pieces to that that prevent bad things from happening. Just focus on your thoughts and how they make you feel and how you can make that better, how you can make yourself comfortable, how you can relax and calm down, and leave all of the other things up to the experts.
Love it. So, Darcy, then, the next trip, you said your goal is to go a bit further. So what's on the calendar then, or the plan?
Yeah. And end of July, we are heading to Bermuda. I haven't been back in about 10 years, but I did spend the majority of my childhood there from kind of 1989 until the early 2000s, taking my 3 best friends who helped me start my animal rescue. It's their first time. So I'm just so excited to show them all my favorite places and where I grew up and what a magical place that is. And we're going to be flying over the ocean in the summer, and it's probably going to be bumpy, but it'll totally be worth it once we get there.
Yeah, brilliant. Christine, great stuff. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
And some really lovely messages there, and very positive and upbeat and just great stuff. So thank you. I really appreciate that.
Absolutely.
And thank you for taking the time. Thank you for listening to the podcast. I know people are out there listening to them, but you don't always get to meet them. And it's just nice to know that, you know, they're helping people like you and, you know, get from a pretty horrid fear to where you are now. You know, I'm not saying we're taking total credit for it, we're part of that process, but you've done the work, like you said, so thank you.
Yeah, no, that last flight I had in August, I'd never experienced, and granted it was quite bumpy and we had a medical emergency on board, so we did have to actually land at another airport to get them off the plane, so it wasn't a great flight. But just how the state I got myself to, it was really a rock bottom for me, so I didn't think I would get back from that. I wasn't sure there was any coming back from that. But I did get a lot of hope just in hearing that it's not just me and I'm not the only one who has these fears and these thoughts and feels that way. Was huge. That was the turning point for me, I think.
Amazing. For sure. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Great to meet you. And it's really nice. That was fabulous.
Well, if you ever get a chance to come out and see the Rockies, it's quite spectacular out here, I will say.
So you'll be a personal guide. We'll descend upon you. The Love Fly team. We'll just
over it. Yeah. William McKay down here, so it's not, you know, it's not shabby.
Oh man, amazing! Oh yeah, I'd love to. I haven't been there, so yeah, there's lots of places I'd like to go. That is also on the list. So that's lovely. Yeah, it'd be nice to know we've got somewhere to go. come give you a shout. Say, all right, what's going on? Come on then.
Anytime.
Oh, amazing. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
I'll let you know when this is out, but really, really grateful for your time and good luck. And if we can help in any way, give us a shout.
You know, that's wonderful.
Yeah. And yeah, we'll look forward to any future posts and photos in July, Bermuda. And thank you.
Absolutely. Take care.
Thank you. Bye. Thank you for listening to the Love Fly podcast. I hope you're finding it helpful with your fear of flying. Now, if you do need some extra tailored help, you can go to our website, lovefly.co.uk, and click on the courses button. You'll find more help there, such as our 30-day program and our on-demand webinar. Thanks again. See you next time.